This is Sophia K. Helene with Professor Yana Liang from the University at Albany, where she researches and teaches environmental engineering. So it's really great to meet you. I'm glad you can make it down here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And I wanted to start off with hopefully an easy question for you. So how did you first get interested in STEM?
Well, let's see. I didn't know anything related to STEM when I was at high school. So when the time came for me to find a major, my advisor at that time basically said, this is good major, it's new. So I just went for it.
Cool. So your advisor really helped you kind of kickstart that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Where did you go to school when you were?
I had my bachelor's in a university at China. And then later on, I came to Utah State University to get my master's and PhD.
Nice. Can you give an overview of the subject? Not many people probably will know exactly what environmental engineering is like capable of or what happens in that. Could you tell me a bit about it?
Okay. Now, the big picture of environmental engineering is to solve any type of environmental problems. So this includes like air pollution, water pollution, soil pollution, all of this stuff, and also include groundwater. So we try to solve all of the pollution issues, make sure the environment is clean, so that is good for human beings.
That's okay. So I really appreciate that kind of solving problems, because it's like so hands-on, right? Because you're actually building things to kind of counteract these issues.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So what are you working on currently? What kind of research are you involved in right now?
Currently, I have two major research themes. Number one is we aim to convert wet waste to valuable products. For example, you know, we have kitchen waste, we have yard waste, all of this, and we want to transform this waste into something that is marketable. And then the second one is developing remediation and treatment technologies for one type of emerging contaminants, and that is called per- and polyfluorinated substances, PFAS.
Okay, so a couple questions off of that. The wet waste you called it, is that like organic matter from?
For example, you have kitchen waste, you know, you have waste food, and then, you know, from either schools or your household, anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then we also have, you know, waste from dairy farms and then from animal farms. Any kind of waste, as long as it contains organic materials, then we can convert these carbons into acids, alcohols, and then something that is valuable.
Huh. Cool. Yeah. Because, I mean, compost is like the only, you know, thing that I think of when I think of like kitchen waste and stuff like that. So that's pretty interesting to kind of branch off from that. And then what you mentioned, it was contaminants, right? The second?
The big class of compounds is called PFAS. And then so talk about New York, and we have several communities. They have been contaminated by this class of compounds, Hoosick Falls, New Berth, and then Petersburg. So this has been very serious problem basically nationwide and then in the whole world. So we see these chemicals basically everywhere because they are being used everywhere in the household, you know, industry. Mm-hmm. And they're just so useful. But again, they are being intentionally and unintentionally spread basically everywhere. We find these chemicals in surface water, groundwater, even drinking water.
Oof.
So it has caused lots of issues to the environment, you know, to the ecosystem and to human beings' health.
Wow. So that's like, so you're just working on kind of finding a way to stop the spread and kind of reverse?
The contamination has been done already in the environment. So these chemicals that are in the environment, but we are trying to find ways to remove these contaminants, for example, from soil sediment, from groundwater, from drinking water, surface water. Yeah, so basically want to remove, destroy these chemicals so they're not in the environment anymore.
Cool. Well, good luck to that.
Yeah, thank you.
So moving away from kind of the scientific aspect, have you ever experienced, or you are a woman, you identify as a woman in
yes.
Science, and Have you ever experienced kind of a unconscious or implicit biases from peers in your field that you could share with us?
Yeah, I think, I talk to lots of female faculty professors, and then we all share this concern. I mean, it is subtle. It's not like a male colleague can say something nasty to you, but you know, we feel this very subtle fact, you know, if you have a male and versus female faculty member joining a department at the same time, the senior faculty will look kind of like respect the male faculty member more than the female faculty. You know, I have gone through that process. So, I mean, that is the reality. Yeah, I'm not saying that it's discrimination, but that's kind of like something people may, it's just like their habit or something.
Yeah,
they just think, you know, female is a little bit
societal
less.
Expectations almost, and they're just grown up with that kind of
mentality.
Yeah, they don't really think of it when they're maybe kind of doing it. So
yeah, maybe just unconscious, but you can tell that, you can see that.
Yeah. And I think I study physics at my school, and it's just kind of, as a woman, it's easier to tell. It's easier to kind of see it because you're experiencing it almost against yourself all the time compared to maybe men in the department who might not ever see that kind of thing.
So I would say, like, for male faculty, you know, they get the respect, but for female faculty, you know, we need to earn the respect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very good
working
good
time. So, you know, we earn their respect.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
So have you ever experienced imposter syndrome where you kind of don't feel as though you belong in your specific field, like you might have gotten there on luck before, and now you're kind of struggling, or you hit one roadblock and you're like, oh, I can't do this. I don't know why I ever thought I could do this. Have you ever experienced this kind of feeling before?
Well, I think, yeah, I had. The professor job requires three components, basically. Teaching, research, and service. I mean, teaching, service, not problems at all. But the research, we needed to write proposals, we needed to write manuscripts. And many times, you know, I have got so many rejections from both. And sometimes I just think, wow, you know, I just want to give up. It's too hard.
Mm-hmm.
But again, what I use to talk to people, like junior faculty or my friends, is, you know, everybody's life is kind of like a journey. So it's kind of like climbing a mountain. If you keep climbing, it's going to become harder and harder. So it's easy to say, I'm stopping here. I'm going down.
Yeah.
But it's much, much harder when you decide to climb up, continue the journey. So I think, yeah, that has been something I have been telling myself. It's not easy, it's difficult, but you know, I like what I do. So that has been keeping me going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of to close off this interview, is there any message that you want to share with young girls or others who are interested in your specific field or STEM in general? Something that, you know, might inspire them or encourage them to kind of pursue that?
Yeah, so I talked to some girls, you know, middle school, high school. What I hear often is, well, you know, STEM is too hard. Math is too hard. And, you know, I like reading, I like writing, and I don't want to get into math and physics, whatever, biology, chemistry. So I would like to say to them, just give them a try. It may not be that difficult, you know, as you think or imagine. So if your mom or, you know, the friends you have, they don't major in STEM, does not mean you cannot major, or does not mean you cannot thrive in these majors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for coming down today. I'm glad you could make it.
Thank you for having me.